Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, everybody. This is Adam from the podcast Filthy Casuals, and I'm here to tell you, specifically you, that there is less than a month until our run of live shows in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. They take place on the 7th of April, the 14th of April, and the 21st of April. All of those are Sundays. All of those are, in my opinion, fun days. We've got guests. We've got comedy. We've got a good time ready for you. Go and get yourself some tickets on comedyfestival.com.au, or you can just use the link that's in the description of this podcast, wherever you may be listening to it. And I'd love to see you there. It's going to be a good time. You can get season tickets to come to all three shows for a cheaper price. Have a look for yourself and have yourself a very good time, in the words of Freddie Mercury, roughly. Be there, please. See you soon.
So I can interact with Mario and Luigi, but there are rules against touching.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games, hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Daslow, and with me, as always...
It's Ben Vanel here, Tommy. I am not with you, as always. I'm back home. You're still in the land of the rising sun, and our third... co-host with the mo-host, Adam Knox, is in an undisclosed location.
Yep, I witnessed a murder and I told everyone about it. So now they're protecting me because unfortunately the person who murdered, I'm free to tell you because I'm in witness protection. I saw Kate Middleton kill someone. That's where she went. She's on the lair.
Right. Cool. Damn. What a scoop. We thought we had a big bombshell to talk about on today's podcast, but you've trumped us there. It's not really video game relevant, but it's bigger globe. It's going to put the podcast on the map more.
She killed Christopher Adobe, who is the inventor of Photoshop. She's done the murder after the Photoshop thing.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say anymore because I can't think of what to say.
Well, speaking of not saying things, I wanted to just quickly... tack on a little anecdote to something we were talking about last week that I forgot to include. Me and Ben and I talked about going to the cafe in Tokyo that is run by an ex-Nintendo employee who worked there in the mid-80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And one thing I forgot to mention was that I asked him what sort of stuff does he play currently? Does he still get much time to play games? And his answer, without even thinking about it for a second, was Watermelon Game. And then we had a lot of fun of all of us in the room just humming along that Watermelon Game theme song.
Yeah. That was the most bonding moment of the entire session. Everyone was into it.
I am so glad that I wasn't at this cafe. It sounds great, but that moment I would have been like, it's not even that good. It's actually derivative of older ones.
It was definitely the most unexpected answer I got out of him in the day, I feel like. Everything else, he was pretty, like, you know, pretty on brand, pretty on message. Mm-hmm. But, I really didn't think I was going to get Watermelon Game as his most enjoyed recent game. But there you go. It cuts through.
Yeah.
It brings people together. In spite of the language barrier, that tune is the great translator.
Mm. Beautiful. I Ben's story that cut out because of the Japanese internet, or the hotel room internet, I should say, internet in Japan generally.
Yeah.
Included in full in the audio episode, truncated in the video. Two versions, like when Zootopia released and they had a koala in Australia and different animals in different parts of the world as the news readers.
Okay. So you've got to go and experience both, even if you heard the audio version first.
Collect them all.
Yeah.
Blue and red.
It makes sense. It makes perfect sense. But yeah, we've been out gallivanting around the countryside, Knox, but there's been video games news happening regardless, which I find to be quite rude on a personal level. But what's going on in Adam Knox's mysterious witness protection news corner?
There's a guy who brings me a stack of newspapers once every 2 months along with supplies. So in the last week, you know what? Joking aside, and yeah, we've been joking this whole time.
That's true.
You'll be able to tell from how much you've been laughing. Putting that aside, big sort of, you know, directly video game related in some senses, but also big inspiration to video games. Akira Toriyama passed suddenly away within the last week. Shocking. And pretty devastating. A really influential person on like my childhood, and I'm sure all of yours. And then, you know, much to my elders, in spite of their efforts to try and raise me better, a huge influence on my adulthood as well. Crazy. And you know, they already held a funeral. They didn't announce the news until sort of a week after that or something.
That's right.
A state thing or something like that at a later date.
And yeah, of course, directly involved in video games with doing all the design work for the Dragon Quest series and Chrono Trigger.
Right.
And there's in like, I keep seeing ads here for like in a month that Sandland adaptation of his manga is coming out. So like actual big crossover and actual huge involvement in video games. And, really sad, like just such a legend, and definitely, I mean, he's already contributed, you know, an all-time piece of art to the world, but he was still going. He's felt like he still had a lot to do, you know. And of course, yeah, I assume that he would have finished the work that he was doing for the new Dragon Quest game, because that's been in development for quite a while. So that'll be another interesting one. Like when, you know, when that comes out, it'll be a case of kind of eulogizing him all over again, you know.
How do we know how active he is still, like on a day-to-day basis with Dragon Quest?
He was doing a ton of stuff. I don't know with Dragon Quest in particular, but he was working on a bunch of projects. Like there was a new Dragon Ball spin-off that I think he was only like supervising or something like that, maybe not directly doing. I'm not sure about that new Dragon Quest, but yeah,
because I imagine with Dragon Quest, like he created all those initial, like all of the enemy character designs and, you know, like the initial sort of like base player character stuff. And maybe, you know, it's more of like a ongoing royalty situation. But yeah, like you say, Knox, there was reports that he was in the middle of several projects. Some of them, I assume, manga, some of them, you know, potentially anime. The Sandland game, like you said, Tommy, is coming out super soon, which I picked up just the little paperback of the manga, which I'd, you know, already read in English, but that was like a I think you must have mentioned it to us, Knox, because of the us sleeping in on holiday, but I had just bought a Sandland figurine, because that is like that weird obscure or, you know, like one off sort of one of his properties. And I was like, oh, yeah, Sandland, that's the one that I'm going to kind of get around. And then, yeah, heard that news and then made sure I picked up an actual copy of the book as a tribute. But, yeah, it's super, super sad. Such a unique and iconic style amongst manga and anime. And, yeah, one that, like, completely alongside, I think, Pokemon, you know, defined anime for probably the three of us, and obviously millions and millions of other people.
Stuff like Pokemon in particular was so influenced by him as well. Like all of those Dragon Quest designs, all of those little monsters really do. The Nicki Minaj fans is what I'm talking about when I say little monsters.
Of course.
Everyone knows that Slime is big into the Queen. But
I'm sorry to tell you, but that's you're thinking of Lady Gaga, aren't you?
I was going to say, I think it's Lady Gaga.
I'm just predicting the DMs that we'll get all throughout the week.
Who are Nicki Minaj's ones? Aren't they little monsters? What are they?
Are they just monsters? I don't know. I don't know anything about Nicki Minaj except she's a beautiful rapper.
much like on a crunchy bar.
Yes.
Yes.
He too young, awful. Thoughts go out to, you know, his people who were around him and who were affected by this. So many like tributes and stuff came in. People in Dragon Quest X, which is the online multiplayer one, and like gathered in common areas and had the, like, services in it and stuff like that, in Final Fantasy 14 as well for some reason. But just like, what a like handprint to leave on an entire genre of visual design, beyond even art, beyond anything, like hugely influential, and also just like really great work as much as beyond the influence, like enjoyable stuff. So thought it was worth bringing that up.
Did you see a guy who was in the live action Dragon Ball movie that they made a little while ago that tanked, that I kind of forgot existed? His tribute to him was to say, RIP to a legend and sorry we fucked up the movie so badly.
Okay, well, I'm glad he tacked that on, because the whole reason that Dragon Ball Super existed apparently is because Toriyama didn't want Evolution, the movie, to be the most recent thing with Dragon Ball on it. So he was like, I got to do something else, and then spent years making what a lot of people, I haven't really gotten into Super, but a lot of people consider it like fantastic. So,
that new one, I think you touched on this before, Ben, I believe he was very involved in, he was more involved in that than he's been in any Dragon Ball stuff for a while. Like he was a little bit more hands on than he's been with, like, it's been other people taking the reins on it for a very long time. So not a guy who was even close to retiring or winding down, like was still, you know, still churning out the good stuff.
I saw on my flight today, I saw a young man playing, I guess, maybe Dragon Ball Z Kakarot or the Dragon Ball FighterZ on his tablet with a PlayStation controller. It's ubiquitous. It's like Mario.
Yeah, it's a shame. And rest in peace to a titan.
Absolutely.
I don't mean to sound sarcastic when I say that either. It just feels so insane saying big words like that, but they apply to him. It's my problem that listen, moving on. Hey, if you want to talk about probably what's going to end up being a less influential piece of art, there was a new trailer put out for that Fallout TV show. Did either of you guys watch that?
No, not yet. And bold claim to say that's going to be less influential than the entire... Look, life's work of Akira Toriyama.
I don't have a crystal ball, but I've got big brass balls of steel. They're brass and steel. That's how fucking brave I am.
It's an alloy.
For the first time in my life, someone's called me an alloy. Thank you very much. I am a friend to every community. It doesn't. It looks fine. Interested in than the previous sort of teaser trailer for whatever reason.
Right. I mean, that first one was really... it was geared to be a, you know, like a showcase, like here's a little flavor, a bit of flavor from each of these different aspects of it. What was the vibe of this new one? Was it more like, okay, and now here's the story of the Fallout world show?
I think what it may have been is, I tell you what, if I did have a crystal ball back in, like, let's say the late 90s or the early 2000s, I would have set up a music recording studio specifically for recording music, the music for trailers like this. And in the early 2000s, we'd have been doing a lot of like that sort of stuff, whatever. We're getting by. It's in the late 2000s that I would have been the first to go, like, we're buying 50 tubers and we're going, boom!
Yeah.
And then we would have made a living off of that for a while. But then we would have been the front runners, the leaders in the industry of the slow / epic cover of pop songs.
Can I ask, this crystal ball that you're able to see into the future with, is this the only thing that it shows you from the future, or can you see all of the future and this is the only thing you choose to act on?
It's shown me everything, and I've not wanted to accidentally step on the bug that changes the course of evolution. other than this one element where I'm like, you know what? I don't think I'm accidentally going to start the rise of Hitler 2 if I just chuck a couple of everybody wants to rule the world in.
Yeah.
This one had, you know, the what is it? The Fallout song, the I don't want to set the world on fire.
Yes.
But then with big, like real annoying shit to me.
Certainly, if you're a tuba player, you're getting your bank of covers ready to go at the moment. Like you're spending every free moment learning every song you can think of, just so that when they call you and ask, like, hey, how soon can you get down to this recording studio to cut a track for this trailer?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You need to have everything under your belt ready to go.
You've got to look up what the power of every superhero is. So if there's like a Twister Man who's really fast at turning, you've got Kylie Minogue spinning around ready to go on your brass section.
Oh, that's right. Me and Ben had shaker fries over here the other day, and I was saying that, like, if you're the person who wrote that song, shake, 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 and you get word that, like, McDonald's are thinking about bringing back the shaker fries, you must just be like, yes, here come the checks.
Are there any realms we could get into? Because, like, if their thing was like, oh, we only put a little bit of seasoning on them, they've already got, just a little bit. So, like...
Yeah. Well, that's what we were saying. Like, writing a song that is just like... you have like a couple of little details in it that you know are going to be picked up for an ad.
I bet Three Doors Down are fucking furious that Warner Brothers has never called them up about Superman. Brother, we wrote a whole song.
It's too on the nose. It should have been like a guy who can fly and has laser vision, but not actually, you know, name the...
Is it a bird? I don't think so. Is it a plane? The jury's out. Anyway, the trailer looked, a lot more like a current era straight to streaming service TV show. If I catch my meaning.
A little bit less character to it. It's not on your level of your... I mean, the first one was great, and like everything the boys does is pretty bang on with their marketing, which again, being, you know, in the same sort of realm culture-wise could easily be lame. Like, I'm thinking of, like, remember the movie Lightyear about Buzz Lightyear?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it had that awful epic cover of Starman by David Bowie.
I was just trying to think of a song that had the word Buzz in it, and you've outdone me on fucking goddamn it level.
But it was so bad. It was the absolute epitome of this trend. It was the low light, and I hope that... if either we can come up with some new way of doing these songs that everyone gets into, like not a tuba, not an epic version, maybe like
Chipmunks.
We use a washboard. Oh, okay.
Oh, I like washboard in the chipmunk style. It'll be something like that. It'll go back around to, like, I don't know, what's that olden days thing? The lute?
Yeah. The lute, the mandolin. I like the idea, of a washboard and a guy playing the spoons, but that for some reason is the trend for every blockbuster trailer.
But that's out really soon, April 11th, I believe.
And it was, did they have a premiere for it at, like, I want to say maybe like South by Southwest? So I guess like
maybe
a bunch of people have seen it, I suppose. Maybe there'll be previews starting to come out soon. I don't know.
I'm looking forward to it a bit still. I think maybe this trailer, the humor came through a little less. Which will be like a key point of that series for me. Mm. And it all goes up on the same day, which is cool for this show, I think.
Yeah, great. Whatever way it goes, I'm curious. And I'm still hopeful, having not seen the second trailer, and maybe we'll not bother. Because, look, my memories of the first... are golden. They're rosy hued.
Well, if you want to talk about trailers for things that you might have a little bit of rose tinted vision toward, there were a couple of leaked trailers this week. One of them was for a cancelled Time Splitters game that was rumored and obviously went down the business toilet when Free Radical got shut down. Time Splitters Next was, I assume, sort of the code name for it, but there was footage of that got out there somehow, and it's very, you know, in production, visibly during the footage of this. But Time Splitters 2 was cool, man, and it's a shame that that went the way that it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never played it, but always been keen to.
Yeah, I think the moment has passed now. Shooters in particular, on console ones especially, have progressed in terms of controls and stuff that I think it just might not feel that great these days. But that's out there. And another one that got out there, Jerry, is one that is from those Insomniac leaks. So, you know, maybe don't go hunting it out and, you know, kind of doing what the leakers wanted to happen, but it's out there for a game that Insomniac was working on and cancelled called Spider-Man The Great Web, which was a multiplayer Spider-Man game.
Right. Mm. What? When was this on the cards? When was this supposed to come out? Or potentially?
Not sure. Yeah, it must have been, because the trailer that they put out is, like, by all accounts, a pretty... this is coming out soon trailer, like announced to release window wouldn't have been that long. So I my guess would be that it was going to be the Miles Morales equivalent in between 2 and 3. So sort of maybe a couple years from now, or 2025 or whatever, how it went, like, you know, Spider-Man 1, Miles Morales 2 years later, and then 2-3 years later. So yeah, that's out there as well, but again, you know, as the result of a direct crime. But an interesting concept. Again, my understanding of it is that it's like all portals and shit, like the across the Spider-Verse sort of thing. So you've got a bunch of different spiders, men coming together and swinging into each other in low resolution Twitter videos of people being like, this game's crazy.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah, this the Forbes article about it mentions and sort of speculates that because there was potentially going to be a playable Venom character in this game, which ended up, you know, in a later Spider-Man game, that maybe, yeah, like you say, Nox probably falls in that sort of that midpoint. But yeah, I don't know. I guess this is, it has to be like a pivot away from multiplayer live service-y stuff.
Yeah, there was all that stuff about Sony, like, kind of going in and shutting down a few. The Naughty Dog one for The Last of Us multiplayer game was slightly different, I think, but there were a fair few games that got sort of taken off the cards by initiatives within Sony, was my understanding of it. I might have that wrong now, but I think this is one of those where it was like a live service game that they were like, actually, fuck this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it, yeah. The story was like, nah, we've seen, like, we've realized that people cannot force this, that these ones that go really, really well and, like, make sense financially just go viral in the way that you know, you cannot, you can't, it can't be contrived. So, sticking to what they know, which is, like, you know, highly curated single-player narrative games. You know, and people appreciate that about Sony, that they are still doing that. So why not stick to it?
Those Spider-Man ones have proven that you can put hundreds of millions of dollars into them and you'll get a return on the single player ones, but you don't want to buy hundreds of millions of dollars worth of lottery tickets like Suicide Squad did, like a ton of those other live service games have done. It's the right move, but it's a cool concept. Like I can't personally imagine how it would work, because those Spider-Man single player games are so, you have so much control over where you're, like, swinging around and stuff in the environment. Trying to imagine seeing somebody else doing that in the distance looks shit to me.
Like when you could see I think it was in Cyberpunk when that was first released, people were like, why can't you do a third person, you know, camera? And then people modded it to put the camera outside of the thing, and you could see the character was, like, you know, it's hunched over, the hands are overlapping with the face, and, you know, all of that shit. Where
I believe they call it goblin mode, Ben.
I think they did call it goblin mode. Well, they would call it green goblin mode in this Spider-Man game. And that's it for me, guys. I'm out.
Yeah.
Well done, everybody. Ba 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 ba.
I gotta say, it is kind of nice to see, like, the swing to, just a lot of these styles of things kind of getting canned. People maybe realizing that they're not the, you know, they're not always the smartest idea. there's been enough of like backlash and enough of them have flopped that, you know, maybe we're going to see a bit of a pivot away from them, which I personally would welcome.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. Like, if people have a good idea, go for it, but don't force it.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, right? Like, the people who are making these ones that pop off and are really successful have spent their entire careers thinking about how to do it and wanting to do it and being passionate about it. Whereas, a big company just being like, can we make some money out of this? Well, let's give it a crack. Yeah. Like, yeah, your Suicide Squad example of recent times, but many other examples too.
Yeah.
And this could have gone the same way too. Like, Talented Studio made a number of very successful, very fun games with that IP that was single player, pivoting to make it, you know, pivoting to do something in the same world but have it be multiplayer, you know, like...
Well, do you know what? Insomniac specifically have done that in the past too. They put out a Ratchet game called, I think, Ratchet and Clank All 4-1, like all number 4-1, that was a multiplayer Ratchet game that was, I think, the most poorly received out of any of them.
Right.
So they've proven that they shouldn't do this.
Yeah, and they kind of already should have known. But, you know, hey, we'll still accept their bowing out.
We'll accept their apology. Yeah, thank you very much for humbling yourselves in front of us by having all of your data stolen.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of camera mods, actually, as well, I saw a really cool thing this week for the Resident Evil 2 remake where someone has gone in and recreated it as the original style fixed camera perspective thing. So they've taken that whole game, added, I think it was something like over 1,700 camera angles.
Yeah,
and
shit.
Changed all the controls so that they make sense from that perspective. And I haven't given it a go because I had that game on PS4, but it looks fucking awesome. Apparently they've pulled it off.
That's a cool, really fun idea. Because once you adapt it, you're like, oh, yeah, cool, this is how it's meant to be now. But, yeah, that's fun. Having to remember, like, oh, in this perspective, diagonal up means left.
I'm not sure how they've changed the controls, if they've taken them back to tank ones or if there's options. But even just from the sort of video of it that I did watch, the effect of having, you know, climbing through a little window joining two areas and then the next camera angle showing down the hallway a zombie who's doing something else and then notices you, it's very different to how it felt playing that great remake.
More action-y in the remake.
Right. Just a gargantuan amount of work it must have been, so congratulations to them.
Yeah, and we also accept their apology.
Yeah, thank you. You've restored one original vision, but ruined the second vision. So if anything, you've kind of leveled the playing field here a bit, but the apology is necessary.
This episode of Filthy Casuals is once again brought to you by our pals over there at Manscaped.
They know hair chopping, and we know their shopping is good value.
Yeah.
Because we've got a code with them.
Yeah.
Are you shopping for a chopping?
Are you shopping for a chopping? Manscaped.com, code filthy, 20% off, free shipping. Done.
Wow, that's... I was going to talk about autumn and leaves falling and shit like that, but I've got to do a chav voice.
No, I recently trimmed my pubic hair. I'm not shopping for a chopping, but I am cruising for a bruising. Would you please bash me?
Well, the products of Manscaped are so... well designed that you could probably hit someone with them, give them a bruise, and it'd still be in perfect working order.
Yeah, sure.
Not their official tag. What about you won't get bashed by them because it's such a smooth ride across your face.
There we go.
You've got like the lawnmower 5.0. You've got like the hair, the ear, nose and hair. Weed whacker.
You sure do.
You've got like the beard hedger. They do tweezers and scissors and all sorts of stuff. Anything you could want to remove.
They do like a travel shaver now as well. Little curvaceous number.
Oh, goddamn.
That's right.
36, 24, 36.
I've checked this as well for practical reasons. The Lawnmower 5.0 is waterproof.
Yes.
It has an LED light to help with shining a little bit of extra brightness on those hard to reach places.
It genuinely really helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you go to manscaped.com and you use the code filthy while you are checking out, you get yourself that 20% off and that free shipping.
Ooh.
And you'd be a darn fool not to use that once in a lifetime offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do it.
Why not?
Hey, while you're down there on the internet,
yes,
you probably need to be pretty safe.
I think that it is a requirement, a basic requirement of interacting with the internet in these days.
Safety first.
A dangerous place, but not if you use the wonderful services of NordVPN.
Before you log on, put on the stack hat, put on the little rubber floaties around your arm, put your training wheels on your computer.
It's way easier than any of that by just using NordVPN. It's very easy to use. They've got apps for a bunch of different devices, and you get the added benefit of being able to trot the globe watch different bits and pieces from different places, maybe check ticket prices for things in different places. It can have an effect. There's lots of different uses.
Yeah, hypothetically, you're in Japan and you're wanting to catch up on maths on the night out.
That's right.
Or if you're not a loser, you could use it for almost anything else. And if you go to nordvpn.com/filthy, you get yourself 4 bonus months on top of a 2-year subscription. Be safe, be secure, be adventurous.
Ooh.
It's all the greenest flags that there are.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You can do what I wanted to do and did, but I went onto YouTube to watch some of the latest episode of SNL.
Oh, yeah.
And that is restricted to America. So I bloody hopped on NordVPN, I put in USA, and boom, I watched an OK monologue.
Live from Melbourne. It's Saturday night.
NordVPN.com/filthy if you're looking for that, which you should be. NordVPN.com/filthy.
Hey, I apologize for having played a game this week.
I don't think you have to apologize for that, Knox. That's part of our remit. That's our MO.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, but also the fact that you didn't say apology accepted has made me feel bad about my unnecessary apology as well. But how about this? Does this change things?
Okay.
It is a game from 9 years ago.
Are you apologizing for that part of it?
You know what? I'm going to take a sudden sharp turn. I'm going to go full LMFAO, sorry, and only apologize for party rocking and nothing else, because I've enjoyed the hell out of revisiting, you might have heard of it, Bloodborne.
Oh, now, Nox, you had my curiosity, but now you have my accept your apology.
Ben, once again, doing the thing he always does of paraphrasing a huge racist. that's a fucking good game. I went back to Elden Ring. I don't remember if I talked about this last week, and just did the couple of bosses that you need to do for the upcoming DLC. I wanted to just get to that point in that game.
I can go on record as absolutely 100%. You did not mention it on last week's podcast.
Okay, that's always a safe thing, a safe position for you to take.
I think we maybe talked about how they announced it and said that that was what you were going to have to do.
I think that's true, and I was like
annoyed
pretty
by that, and then you got over it and actually did it.
And it was so easy to do.
Can you tell me what you had to do, please?
You've got to. So the point of the save that I was in was like my third playthrough, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'd sort of done the ending, so it drops you back in, but not in a new game plus. You've got to like go to the round table for that. I had to go and kill Radahn, because I guess he's not like a necessary boss for a playthrough, so I just hadn't done him in that one.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I had to go and kill Mogwin, who is the one in the underground palace thing.
Yeah.
And to get to him, the quickest way of doing it is doing this guy, that white coat Vara or something like that. And you just talk to him a few times and then do a couple of invasions. And he gives you a little emblem where you can teleport to the boss, basically.
All right.
Pretty easy to do. And those bosses were so much fun to revisit that I was like, damn, From Games. Haven't played Bloodborne since it came out, basically. Mm. And had just such a fucking awesome time going through that entire game and making sure that a remaster or remake will be announced within the next month, probably now. You're welcome.
Yes, thank you.
It's good.
It's incredible. I played it for the first time after I played Elden Ring, after I got into the sort of the rhythm of the Souls games. So yeah, played it way after it was released and would have been even more impressive. I had to slightly, you know, adapt my appreciation of it to pretend I was. When did it come out?
2015, I believe it was, like April-ish of 2015. I think its 9th anniversary is around now.
Yeah, okay.
And it feels old, certainly. Like, it's never had a patch or anything famously for the PS5 version to run better. It still runs at, like, a pretty unstable 30 frames. It looks fairly low resolution and all that, but the style and the artistry of especially like the world and the atmosphere of that game still does come through, even if technically it's, you know, behind now.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of the content in that game, I mean, for the most part is great. The DLC stuff is fantastic, and I'd never done that. I had such a good time revisiting that, and if anyone is on the fence and sitting there waiting for a remaster or something, you probably will still enjoy just as much playing the original version there, because it's not as fucked as it was when it initially came out. It had much longer loading times at first.
Right.
And like the loading screens were just the word Bloodborne on the screen, and it wouldn't show you like, you know, the little bits of flavor that you get of like, here's an item description while you wait.
Mm-hmm.
It just had the Bloodborne logo fucking sitting there for like a minute and a half while you after every time you died. It was kind of appropriately a nightmare. It's still a fan fucking tastic game, and From just make things really in a way that no one else has been able to pull off. Like Lies of P last year was in my top 10 games. I really enjoyed it, but it's just not there. Going back to Bloodborne, which is its biggest inspiration, they're on some other kind of different level. Even 9 years ago, they're pulling off a feel and a mood and just the particulars of how a game controls better than anyone else has been able to do it.
Yeah, I because, yes, like you say, Lies of P, I think, took a lot of inspiration from it aesthetically, but also in terms of that combat stuff, the sort of, like, encouraging you to be aggressive to regain your health. And it's, like, okay in Lies of P, but it is perfectly implemented in Bloodborne.
Yeah.
It alongside all of the sort of weight of the weapons and the speed of the dodge and, you know, all of that stuff, it's just, yeah, it's perfect. And, like, I don't know what else came out in 2015, but if we were doing a retrospective game of the year for that year now, like, man, it's tough to see anything topping Bloodborne. It's the story of it is so well, like, told. It's so creepy, but it's so atmospheric in a way that draws you in. It's not just like, you know, those amnesia games or whatever where you're just scared. It's you know, it's engaging and interesting. You're invested in it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the bosses are just so fucking good and fun and well-designed. And that sort of Metroid-style, you know, area exploration, unlocking your shortcuts and all of that stuff.
That's the biggest thing that is really not matched going back to it. And by Elden Ring or by Sekiro as well.
Sure.
Is that level design where the feeling of opening up some door, climbing up a ladder, and then going, oh shit, I'm back here, that's great. It is done so well in that game. It feels like such a solid and real place because of it. Like,
totally. And it's always such a relief.
Yeah, yeah. Going on this huge journey and then winding up, you know, at a recognizable spot. It's so well done in that game. Dark Souls 1 and Bloodborne had the best of that. 2015 as well had like Metal Gear Solid 5, Witcher 3,
yeah.
Some big hitters, but yeah, it's definitely up there. So I had a great time enjoying a wonderfully designed area. Can you boys relate to that thought at all?
Yeah, we went to the Snoopy Museum together.
Oh, wow. What's that little fucking dog up to?
Oh, heaps. I honestly loved it. We should maybe talk about it on a bonus episode. For anyone who hasn't heard our bonus podcast, you can get it by subscribing to our Patreon at patreon.com/filthycasualspod. But we're on the video games podcast now. I guess we should probably talk about our visit to Universal Studios, Super Nintendo Land.
Yeah, we were in Osaka. We took a little trip out there, somewhat in honor of the birthday of one of the hosts of the Filthy Casuals podcast, Ben Vanell.
That's right. It was not intended to be on my birthday, but it lined up that way. And fuck me, am I glad it did.
It's funny.
It was amazing.
That it's funny that that means you went the day after Mario Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we went on Mari...
There's a Pokemon called Marill, Day? I'm pretty sure. It could be Marill Day.
Yeah, we went on Marill Day.
Yeah.
The one could be an I and an L. Actually, we forgot to say as well, during that Mario Day stuff, they announced a new Super Mario Brothers movie too.
Oh, yeah.
Or a new movie set in the Mario Brothers world and stuff like that, some Game Boy games. But they also announced tomorrow, Big Ben's birthday, and he's coming down and getting some free, Mario popcorn? What kind of snacks do you get there if it's your birthday?
There was popcorn, but it was Demon Slayer themed.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in Super Nintendo Land, just in Universal Studios.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little, I'll lower the decibels of my watt somewhat then.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
We were with our friends Zan and Gibby, who, shout out to Zan, who really had to lead us around like little children all day. She kind of handled all of the on-ground logistics. Because you buy your ticket, you can pay a little bit more to have an express pass, which gets you into the rides quicker. But then you also have to, when you book the ticket months out, you have to decide what time you want to go into all these individual rides. So you're sitting there 3 months out from the trip going, yeah, am I going to want to go on the Mario Kart ride at 10:30 a.m. and then the Minions ride at 1 just after lunch, like when you've never been there? Insane. Mm. But it doesn't seem to save that information on your end. So we went in there not really knowing what we were doing or when. But whether it'd been okay, the lead up to this day, all we're seeing is that the weather's going to be absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
Heavy rain forecast. And I think you do get the option of pivoting your ticket, but we that was like the one day where all four of us were kind of like overlapping in Osaka at the same time. So it had to be that day. We rugged up. We all had our raincoats on. We walked through the gates of Universal Studios onto Main Street, and it is bucketing. It is absolutely bucketing.
It's still pretty busy, and we walked in at 9 a.m. on a what day was my Tuesday?
Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday, 9 a.m. About 11 degrees, maybe 10 degrees, and absolutely pissing down. But packed full of people. Everyone's in their ponchos. Everyone's got their transparent umbrellas. And then a few of other people have got Mario ponchos, Snoopy ponchos. Ooh. The people are putting on their ponchos. Basically the first bit of Universal Studios, believe it or not, is reminiscent of Warner Brothers Movie World. It's a Hollywood style park.
Oh hell yeah! Some guy named Daryl yelling at his kids.
Daryl's son. But yeah, we kind of poodled around the gift shops and waited for the rain to ease, which it did later on.
We hit up the Mario and Luigi Cafe.
Yes,
where I got a Mario strawberry creaming soda.
Yep.
You could get a Luigi green apple flavored one, and they also have these little kind of, what are they, like little pancake sandwiches
with
like whipped cream in them, and they're like in the shape of a Mario or Luigi hat, and then they're in like a little cardboard container that's made to look like the Mario overalls. Very cool.
Worth
saying that the other three of us all just got normal coffees in normal coffee
Huge
shops.
Line. Huge line for this themed Mario Brothers cafe. And then we wait in the line for like half an hour, and then the three of you get to the end and go, yeah, just a small black coffee, thanks.
Nah, that is insane. If it weren't for Tommy having already put himself through the humiliation of needing an actual adult to help him book his tickets, then I'd be fully on Tommy's side. But right now I'm a bit Switzerland about this.
They were just very specific drinks. I think there was like, you get a hot pudding parfait thing in a cup, and like, I just like, it was
early.
We got there at 9 a.m.
It's a lot of sugar for 9 a.m.
Yeah, it was too early for it.
Yeah,
but I just felt like I got to do it. I got to engage.
It was very funny.
The cherry popcorn, you could get it in a plastic, like a big plastic container of like a girl in a cage from Demon Slayer.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I don't know Demon Slayer. If I just saw a girl in a cage being held by someone walking around, I think I'd have assumed you'd made it.
Weirdly, I didn't know Demon Slayer was going to be part of this, but I just started watching it over the past sort of 3 or 4 weeks, been loving it. But it still doesn't seem appropriate. Like, the whole point of the show is that, like, there's a family and the parents get killed by demons. The sister gets turned into a demon, which is why she's in a cage all the time. And then the son or her brother is trying to, like, save her and becomes a demon slayer. But, like, it's not... Like, that's... that it. There's kids at a theme park. Like, that's a bizarre piece of merch. It was very tasty popcorn, though.
Yeah, it was cherry-flavored popcorn, which was great. You get, like, an app that will tell you how long the waits are for all the rides if you don't have the express ticket. And all day, far and away, the longest wait was for the Demon Slayer, like, 4D ride that they have there. Like, 3-hour wait from even when we got there at 9 a.m. So,
wow.
Hugely popular here. Popular ride at the theme park. Like, So,
I think the least popular was the Jaws ride, which, you know, I feel like Jaws is old, but it's still probably going to have a bit of a draw in a Western country, maybe. But it was like, 20 minutes and hop on the thing, which did look like it had been there for like 35 years and wasn't the most, creative and magical experience. But
I've been on the Jaws ride at, like, I guess Movie World, and it was just like a shit boat through a lake where plaster shark slowly and audibly mechanically came up from the water and went like that. Like,
yeah, it was
one of the worst experiences of my blessed life.
that happened.
Imagine that, but then the tour guide person who's kind of acting out all that stuff speaking a language that you don't speak, so you can't even understand the narrative structure of the ride that you're on.
Now it's back up to a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, that I think that genuinely improved it. And then there were, like, explosions in the water and one bit caught fire. So, like, that was fun.
That was cool.
Was a bit chilly outside, cool. So, you know, have a little flames on the... But, yeah, so what other stuff... I was very tempted to get, Tommy, to get a Snoopy bucket hat, which was basically Snoopy's head with the ears hanging down, and oh my god, it was Riz to the nines. But
yeah, it's like if Snoopy was big game and you'd hunted him and were, like, you know, wearing his skull around as a trophy.
That's right.
I can't believe this dentist killed Snoopy.
It's actually a pretty dark theme park now that we're kind of putting all these popcorn buckets of women in cages and decapitated Snoopies in order.
Well, you're burying in some ways the video game lead, and the only thing I've known about to do with the Japan Universal Studios that I think has popped up in other Universal Studios now, different versions of this thing, but they've got bloody... It's not called Super Mario World, is it?
Super Nintendo World.
Nintendo World.
Right.
And you're right. There's one now at the Universal Studios in California. But so, that is like you have to get... I think it's an... I don't know if it's... It's maybe not an extra ticket, but again, it's like a timed entry thing. So you have to, like, choose when you're going to go into that part of the park, because it kind of is... Everything else is just like a little area where you can still kind of see... Like, there's a Jurassic Park bit where, like, it's next to the Jaws bit, so you can see all the Jaws stuff. But the Super Nintendo World area is like... It's a bit of a walk kind of up in the corner, and then once you're in there, it is really sealed off. Like, it does just feel like you're in its own sort of separate theme park.
Honestly, like, you're not... it would track with the sort of image I have of him as a man in my head, that Mario would live in a gated community.
That's what it is. It's Nintendo gated community, yeah.
Long driveway. We got stopped the first time we tried to go in. We had to go back with bloody mustaches on, didn't we?
Yes.
But yeah, you go in, you sort of walk on this sort of like curving sort of hill sort of entry thing where as you're going through the line, you can hear a lot of coin blocks going, a lot of wahoos. Like, it really gets you barred up by the time you go through the little gates and you see a big fucking green pipe. And,
yeah, if you thought you were chubbed up from the girl in the cage, you ain't felt nothing yet.
The green pipe that you walk through is such a nice touch because you go in and it kind of curves around and there's sort of lights on the roof and on the sides kind of giving the effect that you're sort of whizzing through the pipe. And then you turn a corner and you come out and you're just in the park. So even just the fact that, like, you can't see any of this stuff before you round that corner and like come out of the walkway is just gives it the most amazing effect, because what you're walking into is an area where it's set out like a Mario level, but like everything is moving. There's coins on the hill that are all rotating like they do in the games. There's a little Yoshi doing laps of a tree. There's the verticality of it is amazing. It's like there's like a massive hill in front of you that's got like a big Mario flagpole on the end of it. And it is true. Like, having seen videos of it and photos of it and having heard about it from people who'd been there, it's still the effect of actually walking into it was true. Like, so breathtaking. Like, it, that effect of being in a cartoon that has come to life. I've never seen anything done like quite to that effect, like nail it with such a degree of polish to that extent.
Every time you stop and look around was a whole new sort of like overwhelming experience. But super well laid out, as for as many like thousands of people who were there that day, never felt particularly cramped. And you could basically always feel, you know, comfortable to just sort of stop and lean against, you know, a little fire flower and have a little look around. But yeah, the way talk about the sort of wristband thing, Tommy, because that was really interesting.
So you can get a wristband when you go in. That's like it's sort of Apple Watch kind of size. But it's just got like, it's not a watch. It's just got like a little logo of whatever character you choose on it. And you
have to pay for it, by the way. You got to buy it. This is not given.
Okay.
I'd heard about these. I was assumed they were just kind of part of. That you got one as you went in, but you have to pay for them.
That's like, I'm thinking of like Taylor Swift concert, how everyone gets them and then it makes the animations in the crowd or whatever, like that type of thing you get for free in those concerts.
I think a little bit more sort of like hefty. It was sort of rubber coated, and it's got like like a near field communication chip in it, and it's like, it's not, it didn't feel cheap, certainly.
No.
But
no,
I think, and it's like theme park prices, but like 40, the comparison is like what, $45 Australian for this thing,
something like that. I mean, it is worth having in the park, and it's, I guess then it's like a kind of neat souvenir, because the so what it actually does for you in the park is that you pair it to an app, the Nintendo World app, and it will, while you're walking around the park, there are tons of question mark blocks that are sort of soft underneath.
Shit,
so you can punch them
there.
And then they'll make a sound, and you unlock coins on the app. So the app is like tracking how many coins you've gotten during the day. You also get you earn coins on the rides that you go on. And there's three sections around the park that are like these little mini games that you have to complete. They're these like little time challenge things. And you go on and you tap your wristband to it. And then if you're successful in the challenge, it gives you a little key. And if you get three of those keys, you can go into this area where you fight Bowser Jr. And the way that you fight him is you're standing in front of a huge screen and it's kind of showing you yourself back in silhouette. And then things are falling from the sky like bombs that you either have to like swat out of the way. You can grab a power up and get a fire flower and then be like moving your hands to shoot fireballs at Bowser Jr. It's cool. So it's like, yeah, it was expensive for what it is, like the power band, but the fact that it like then turns the whole park into a video game is really cool. And just that little sort of step above of like what you would expect out of it just being a Nintendo theme park. It's like, oh yeah, of course it should be. Yeah, it should be a live video. You're in what feels like a live video game. So the fact that you can do a little challenge thing in there was really fucking cool.
Yeah, it was very well implemented. And I think after a couple of rides, both Gibby and I were like, yeah, fuck, why didn't we get the wristband? But it's too late now. But
Gibby especially was really spewing that he didn't have the wristband.
It ruined his entire trip.
He tried to use mine to go on the bit that I had just done. And because I'd just done it, it wouldn't let him. Like, you have to, it resets the challenge. So you've got to go and like get all the keys all over again to go and do the Bowser Jr. thing.
Honestly, like picturing going here with kids as well, this sounds like a day ruining wrinkle to be thrown in there.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you got to do your research before you go and suss out the like, the timed rides thing. Because again, like the main roller coaster in Super Nintendo World is Mario Kart themed. And again, if you just rock up there, you're going to wait in line for 2 hours plus. But because we had the express passes, I think we were in line for like maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah, which, 15, 20.
Wow. Yeah. Was great for the purposes of, you know, fitting a lot in during the day. But the area where you go and wait and line up, you walk into a big Bowser's castle, and the whole huge area where you line up, where there's, you know, there's obviously heaps of room for the line to stretch as far as it needs to go, you walk through all these different bits that are so unbelievably detailed for something that a lot of people are just going to breeze right past. Like, it's the whole conceit of it is that you're getting ready to go on this, to go do Mario Kart, and Bowser's getting ready for the race. And so he's like, you know, he's got his like planning of the tracks and the little traps that he's going to lay. And he's got like a little diorama that he's made. And he's got like all his like safety thing, like just all this incredibly detailed stuff. Like all the trophies that you get in Mario Kart 8 are all there in a display cabinet.
Yeah, that's
massive
right.
Stone statue of him when you walk up the stairs and go in. It's
which... Yeah, like, it's not... Because I enjoyed the details, obviously, but I think, you know, and we sent you a photo, Nox, of that, the big statue.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, the most impressive thing is that it just... It looks like the cartoon, or it looks like the games. Mm. It looks like it is an animated, invented world, but it's real and it's physical. And, like, the statue's made of, like, you know, maybe concrete or something, or, like, some kind of, like, not stone, but stone enough... and like, yeah, there was a bit where like, you know, the classic big oversized sort of chains are like, you know, hanging from the ceilings, which, yeah, we like knocked on and they're actually metal. And it's like, it's just this wild experience of being inside a video game that manages to both feel completely tangible and real and look absolutely like the games that are in your imagination.
Like a cartoon.
It's cool that, because like not having been there but having seen like photos and footage and stuff, that's the effect it has on camera, is that it's this strange and confusing, really convincing, like you're saying, real life version. It's great that that carries over in actual real life, that even when you're seeing it there, it doesn't look like, you know, you could that whole thing could be so shit the second that you're like, that's a fiberglass Goomba, I don't give a shit. Like,
it's cheap. It's out of hefty stuff. And then I think it's all, and it's only been around for like what, a couple of years? It's all pristine. It's all in such good condition, which I think is probably part of what allows it to maintain that illusion and that aesthetic. It's not grimy, it's not scratched, you're not seeing shit on the floor. Like,
and it's been there for a bit, because I think it was meant to open with the 2020 Olympics, which so it would have opened in 21 or whatever, but so it's been there for a while. And, you know,
I think that is just like Japan, right? They like, there'd be great consideration taken into keeping all the stuff clean, and, you know, like they get rain, they get snow, so it like, and and these most impressive moving bits when you walk in the main bit, like it is all outdoors, it is very much subject to the elements, but clearly they're like, you know, doing whatever they need to do to like, you know, give it a bit of a tune up when it needs it. There was a great moment of when you and Gibby knocked on those chains to see what they were made out of, and seeing that it was real metal, and seeing Gibby, who studied engineering, go, real metal, nice.
Yeah, we all had different ways to appreciate the day.
So the Mario Kart ride, you get in this big oversized cart, and you're all wearing a little helmet that then a visor – gets clipped onto. That's a little screen that's in front of you.
Fucking hell.
And you go on this track.
This was insane.
Yeah. You're moving along this track and through the visor, you are seeing these little AR projections of Mario and the Koopa kids and all these characters kind of screeching around in front of you. And you've also got a button in your steering wheel that you can push that will shoot shells at them. So you aim by looking. So you're kind of, you're being guided through this course. And then, yeah, over the top of that, you're seeing this AR overlay of these characters and you're sort of kind of, you know, you're meant to be sort of looking around the space and lining up the shot and like lining up the item blocks to get more of the shells. It's really fucking cool.
That yeah, is it's awesome.
It's not like a roller coaster. It is like, yeah, some of those like the big famous high budget theme park rides where it's all indoors. You're on, you know, kind of one thing that spins and moves and stops and starts based on, you know, the program of the ride. You're getting hit with, you know, lights and sound at certain specific points.
Yeah.
But yeah, incorporating the, not just the, yeah, design, the physical design of this this course, which is obviously, yeah, so incredible, but you're kind of playing a weird AR Mario Kart game at the same time. It was, and like, it's tracking, like, you get, you know, coins based on how many of the enemies you hit and stuff like that. Can't remember which of the four of us got the most coins, but
yeah, probably, I can't either.
Probably
I actually
someone
can't either. Yeah,
with a huge penis and an even bigger brain.
Congratulations, I think it was Zand.
But no, it's like, and I think for some people, especially someone who's never experienced like VR stuff, that might have been an overwhelming experience, and I feel like that was kind of the vibe for all of us. It was a bit like, because, you know, obviously the visor doesn't completely cover your face. So you can sort of see around the glass and like, you know, things that aren't there aren't there. But I still thought it was really, really fun.
Yeah, we're also getting the briefing for it before we go in another language.
Yes.
But also with some like visual guide. So even that, like before it started, I was like, I think I get this, but I hope I'm doing the ride properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is what I really loved about it was that it's this like the merging of like you go up to bits where you're in front of a screen, but then there's like tangible stuff as well. And it's this kind of mishmash of like sort of every type of Mario Kart course that exists. Like you go underwater, then you go up into the airship and you're thundering skies and the like main sort of Luigi Speedway kind of track. Like it's cool that they bring in a bit of like all of the motifs in there to it. And yeah, you're just having all of the music and yeah, your car's being tossed around and skidding around the corners. Yeah, it was super fun. And it's kind of funny that it's taken Nintendo this long to have a theme park for their stuff, but also waiting as long as they have has meant that they've just got so much stuff to pick from when it comes to putting something like this together. Like, you can imagine Mario Kart not existing and it being like, yeah, the roller coaster is, you're in, Mario's is driving a limo and you're sitting in that.
Well,
you know,
yeah, like Mario Kart would be just like dodgem cars that just look kind of like shitty Mario Karts. The roller coaster, like you're saying, would just be like 1-1 from Super Mario Brothers or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But with just like a screen printed wall next to you that looked like that level and you were just going on a normal roller coaster. Because coming from here, our roller coaster's got someone standing on it to drive it. Like, we don't have anything like fucking this. It sounds unpicturable to me in a good way. You don't have any control over the actual cart movement, though, it sounds like.
No, they said you
have a steering wheel. You're told to steer, but I don't know really what, because I don't know if maybe that has some effect on the AR stuff that you're seeing. I'm not sure, but
maybe it's just more for the actual cart is just
on.
Well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm.
But I think it felt like you were. I mean, you are on rails, but I think I couldn't tell. But it was mainly you're focusing on turning your head with the AR visor and shooting your shells, and like you do like. Yeah, you pick up the sort of, you know, the rainbow question block like in Mario, but I don't like I'm sure you would have just done that anyway. It's not like you're steering towards it. Yeah. But whatever. Like, that didn't matter. Like, that was that. All of that stuff wasn't an extra thing on top of a ride I already was really excited for and thought was going to be great. But yeah, like, I also, it's hard to picture and it's hard to describe. And that's for the best, because, like, if you get to experience it, then you're gonna have a fucking ball.
We also, following that, we went on the Yoshi's Adventure ride, which is undeniably for babies, but damned if we didn't have a great time.
Good thing that there was someone to book the tickets for you for this baby's ride then.
I mean, they were, mummy and daddy were riding up front, but this was,
it's
like,
it's kind of a very slow scenic railway. You're sitting in a little Yoshi, and it's very slow, but the cool thing about it is because all of the stuff in the park is so cool and you want to see it all, it just kind of takes you on a little scenic tour around that, and you kind of see little bits of it that you can't see from down on the ground. The waiting area that you're in is all Yoshi's Island themed, which I didn't expect. It's all the like pastel kind of, you know, colored pencil kind of stuff, which was, again, just another little level of... it's funny because it obviously everyone engages with this stuff in a different way that's going to be at the park, like a lot of like little kids who've maybe only seen the movie, but it does such a good job of being a fun thing for a kid and a family, but also having like, so many of these little nods to the games, like the, you know, like the Mario Kart tracks all having the like different little motifs in there. It wasn't like a surface level thing of just like, oh yeah, here's the Yoshi bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. All right. I should have come.
I'll tell you the worst thing about it. And look, maybe... Anyway, the worst thing about it, from certain bits of the park... So they've said that they're opening a Donkey Kong Country section of the park sometime this year. And so there's like a bit in the corner that's sort of all... that's got like a big... It's got like decorative stuff on it, but you can tell that that's the bit that'll be the like entrance into the next bit of it. And from certain bits of the park, you're high up enough that you can sort of see the top of this Donkey Kong bit that looks more or less ready to go. And in fact, they've even started rolling out, like they've got a lot of Donkey Kong stuff in the gift shops now. Mm. Some of the like overall Super Nintendo World memorabilia that you get in there has Donkey Kong on it. And in fact, I didn't notice this when I got it, but my power band that I got, Ben, there's a little map in there. And when you fold it up, it's got all the Donkey Kong stuff on there as well.
Like,
it's
so,
which is like kind of frustrating that it's like,
it's
don't
like
show
a,
me this.
A month, like, a month away or something.
Yeah. It must be.
I remember when I went to Taronga Zoo in Sydney, that they were building a new habitat for the lions. But then from a different part of the zoo, I was high enough that I could see the lions. And it made me feel like, oh, so they're here. They're not staying at their fucking, you know, auntie's house for a while. Yeah. Let me up there. They're not free roaming.
Cage. Yeah.
I mean, that'll be just seen on based on the quality of what we've seen, the fact that there'll be a, they've said there's going to be a, like a Donkey Kong minecart ride. And yeah, if you put that in there and then you've got that being a little bit more like, a little bit more thrill seekery, perhaps.
Yeah.
Than the stuff that we like. Yeah, that is going to be really great. Like, yeah, just based on, it took me us a little while to get over there and finally get into Nintendo World. But yeah, knowing that Donkey Kong Country will be opening soon, I certainly, I'd be doing whatever I can to get over to get in there before too long after it's open. Because it was such a great experience.
Yeah, it's almost to the point where you can just literally go there and just do Super Nintendo World for the day. Because it only has those two rides. It only has the Mario Kart and the Yoshi one, and then it has that interactive stuff that Tommy did as well. But you probably can't. You're not spending 8 hours there. Unless there's a little Donkey Kong man who pushes you down the ride. You go on the mine carts. Because we did go on some other rides, and one of them was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Maybe let's talk about them on the bonus.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Yeah, next week. This week is our other Japan special that we pre-recorded before you guys left. But Super Nintendo World sounds cool. You might not know this, but do you happen to know if the California one is like a carbon copy of this or if people want to go to that one?
I believe so. I think so, yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. I'll see you bitches in California.
Yeah, so much gift shop stuff too.
Yeah.
So much neat Mario swag to be picked up. Gibby got a clipboard that has all the, you know, like on the loading screens of Mario Kart 8, they've got all the like Mario motors and like Bowser's oil and stuff that are sort of done in the style of all that old stuff. Oh. He got a clipboard with all of that stuff on it and he's like, I have no idea when I'm going to use this, but it's just the easiest thing to travel with. So I'm getting my clipboard.
Yeah.
The idea, hopefully not Gibby, but someone using that clipboard to like sign divorce papers or something like that.
Well, him and Zan aren't married, so they could sign the wedding papers on it.
Beautiful. Yeah. Lovely. Yeah, there you lovely. Go. A much nicer idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm very jealous. I wish I'd have gone, but I'm saving up to go to I'm going to build the real thing on an offshore oil rig.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, real carts, baby.
Yeah.
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 No rules.
I hope we live to see Miyamoto mentally decline to the point where he goes full Howard Hughes and he's just living somewhere in there in Super Nintendo World.
He's set up his own series of traps and tricks using the wristbands. You got to. It's like Five Nights at Freddy's, I guess. We're describing Five Nights at Freddy's.
It slices your hand. Yeah, yeah. He's inside one of the suits or whatever, his ghost or something. However, Five Nights at Freddy's works.
I just kept thinking, like, how crazy that must be for like him specifically to walk around it. You know what I mean? The guy that did the little sketch 35 years ago, and just be like having that experience of like, wow, hundreds of people worked around the clock to bring this into a physical space.
It must be bizarre, like seeing something you've drawn a million times come to life. Like, what did it feel like for you to see that woman in a cage?
God, he's quick.
Then you can know
he's,
it.
Well, he's well rested. I just got on a fucking... I got.
The way
happy
I
birthday, coughed. Ben.
I'm looking forward to the day that a little kid can be on that stage at the Game Awards and say like, yep, this game, you know, I had the idea for this game, when I was reminded of my childhood walking through Super Nintendo World and seeing all the Goombas and the Koopas and what that game's going to inspire. Maybe it's going to inspire literally a remake of Super Nintendo or Super Mario Brothers 1 and we just start the cycle all again.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you'll like this, Adam. This was cool.
Don't presume to know my mind. But feel free to try.
I'll be shocked if you don't. It being called Super Nintendo World, but then everything in that theme park is all Mario themed. Like the rides and the level sort of stuff that you're looking at and in the gift shop and in the cafe. Except for dotted around a few little spots, I'll be damned if there aren't a couple of little Pikmin. Just stealing their little coins and trying to boost each other up to, I don't know, get a look in the girls' toilets or something. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But, yeah, I saw maybe four or five little and I thought that was cool that, like, that's the only non-Mario stuff that's crept in there. But
I like
nice
that
touch.
Very
I
much.
It.
You know what? Tommy's got that crystal ball we were talking about before because I loved it. You were right.
Yeah.
Yes. I knew it.
It is a shame that it's only Mario stuff because, like, we'd also been around to, like, a bunch of the Nintendo stores just in the normal cities, not inside not the gift shops. And like, obviously there's a shit ton of Mario stuff. But there's also, there's obviously a lot of Zelda stuff, but there's a big section of Pikmin stuff. I think it's basically Mario and Mario related things, Zelda,
Animal Crossing, Splatoon,
which, I feel like he's a waste of space, but that's just me. But yeah, like, there's
Are you telling me you wouldn't buy yourself a Splatoon with fucking Super Soaker?
They didn't have one, but maybe that's the one trick they're missing.
International
travel
with a fake gun.
They do sell a lot of the clothes from the game, which is cool.
They've got a what?
They sell like a lot of the clothes that you can get in the game.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, the DLC for that came out in the last week, and I haven't played it yet, but I'm keen to give that a shot. And maybe we'll talk about that next week when we're all back in the room together.
Yeah.
Not having to deal with shit hotel Wi-Fi. We'll be dealing with just shit air speeds that you get here in Australia.
It would be cool to see this expand out. I mean, they've already got the Donkey Kong thing happening, but I think that's just they bought some land kind of behind where the Nintendo bit is now to expand that out. But what I'd love to see is a bit of a Nintendo Universal Studios hostile takeover where all of a sudden they're like, you know what would be a better use of this lake than the fucking Jaws ride? Splatoon ride. Get the fuck out of here, you stupid shark.
Yeah, that shark's an F-Zero car now.
Yeah. You're going to need a bigger boat to fuck off in.
Yeah. It is funny. There's not a lot of Metroid stuff, like, just in general, like, in the Nintendo stores. Or they've really focused in on those, like, four or five properties. But, man, just keep taking over stuff. Except leave some of the other stuff at Universal Studios, which we'll talk about next week's bonus episode. Some of it is very fucking cool.
Yeah. Well, we're going to leave it there. That's going to do us for another week on Filthy Casuals. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Filthycasuals.com.au for the links to everything that we have going on. We've got the Patreon. Get on there. Get yourself bonus show every week. We're talking Japanese movies this week. We'll be talking more theme park stuff from Universal Studios next week. We've got our shows at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, April 7, 14 and 21 at the Coopers Inn. You can come to just any one of them or you can get a season pass. They're going to be all different and they're not going to be uploaded onto the podcast feed. They're live only, so you have to be in the room to see what happens. Great special guests joining us for all of those.
Yep, links in the description for that as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
I just won the Nerd Super Bowl. I'm going to Super Nintendo World.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.